I've been blessed by what we've experienced already this morning, and I feel like I would have enough to go off of for the rest of the day. The singing, I really enjoyed the singing by you children. That was really special. Praise from children is wonderful. It's heavenly. The lesson about our conscience was directed to the children, but I think it's also very much applicable for us parents. I think it's very foundational to us being able to be the parents we should be by having our conscience clean, by having a fast conscience, a conscience that responds when it needs to, keeping that connection with God current. Thank you for that, Tyler. Thinking of child training, the title specifically this morning, Diligent or Delinquent, I guess first of all, I would feel much more comfortable seeing an old person up here speaking about child training. I think I'm probably one of the younger parents here this weekend. So things that I say today are not things that I feel like we have attained to as parents, but by the grace of God strive for. And to you children listening here, we're speaking to the parents, but we're also speaking to you because life is a journey. We start and fast forward 10, maybe 15 years. You all might be sitting here with your families at Penn Valley Family Week, going through some of the same things that we are in life, trying to figure out how to teach your children and effectively pass it on to the next generation. So there's something here for everybody this morning. As I was thinking about the title, Diligent or Delinquent, I was thinking of diligent being middle of the road. And so if there's a road, there's probably a ditch on both sides. So delinquent being on this side, and my mind went to, well, what's on the other side? And I thought of the word dominating. And if I may, I want to add that to my title this morning. So we have dominating on one side, we have diligent, that's the middle road, and then we have delinquent on the other side. And I'd like to look at those three this morning and try to draw lessons from Scripture on what those look like and how we can stay on the middle road as parents. So just looking at the definition maybe of the first ditch, dominating, just a simple definition of that, having a commanding influence on or exercising control over, just something that's commanding. Not much feeling, just a straight, hard line, and that's the only way. Delinquent, the other ditch, there's multiple definitions of delinquent, but as we're speaking of it today, it would be considered offending by neglect of duty. So if we know to do something and we're not doing it, that would be delinquency. And then diligent, the one I would like to focus on this morning, as the ideal, the middle of the road, is characterized by steady, earnest, and energetic effort. So in our homes, being steady, being earnest, and being energetic about executing our homemaking. Whether that be mom or dad, it's a team effort, and there's many things that each one of us give to that. I'd like to look at a couple examples, tell a couple stories from, first one is from 1 Samuel. We have the high priest Eli, that was a priest in the temple in Shiloh. And this is the temple where Hannah went to pray for a son. And it is Eli, the priest, that blessed her. And I'm going to skip over a lot of the fine details of this story for the sake of time. But Eli had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. They were priests as well, and they were wicked men. The Bible says they knew not God, and they were sons of Belial. And Eli was aware that they were not living right. Eli was aware that they were sinful men, and he was aware that they were abusing the sacrificial system and living deliberately in sin. Eli did not like it. I don't think he was condoning it. But neither was he doing anything about it. And God was very displeased with that. A man of God, it doesn't say what his name was, came to Eli. He came to Eli and simply told him that God was going to judge him for the way his sons, the way his family was acting. And the main reason that it said that God was judging Eli and his family is because he knew of their sin and he did not properly restrain them. And we could go many different directions with that, but I'd like to just think about that. Eli knew something that he should do, and he didn't do. And it's an example of, I think, what we're thinking of as being delinquent. Knowing to do something and not doing it. He did not restrain them. As the story goes on, in the course of time, Samuel was born. Samuel was in the temple. Samuel had God calling him several times. Going to Eli, the priest, Eli said, "Go back and listen again." We know that story well. And when God spoke to Samuel, God told Samuel the judgment that would come upon Eli. And Samuel was the one that had to break again that news to Eli. And as it turns out, Eli's sons Hophni and Phinehas, now let me back up just a little bit, the Philistines came and attacked the Israelites. And the Israelites were being destroyed by the Philistines. And usually when that happened, the Israelites were alerted to, okay, what's wrong? There's sin in the camp. What can we do to make this right? And Hophni and Phinehas, in their desperation to somehow do something, went and got the altar of God and brought it to where the battle was in hopes that that would save the army. The altar was then taken by the Philistines. Hophni and Phinehas were killed. And when Eli heard that they were killed, he fell over and died himself. Very sad story, but it's a story of God's judgment on someone that knew to do and did not. And I feel like that's an extreme example. Many times in our homes, in our families, there's things that we know to do, we don't do them, and the consequences are not that harsh, they're not that severe. But I think the same principle applies. There's a lot of things that a mother brings to a family. There's a lot of things that a father brings to a family, and both of them are very necessary. Mothers being nurturers, you feel, you listen to your children, you just feel more of how they feel. As fathers, maybe not so much that way. We try, but God hasn't given us that special intuition as much as mothers have. Maybe for us fathers, God has given us the ability to look at a situation and look at it objectively and maybe not be so much feeling, but say, okay, how can we fix this problem? How can we get past that? And we men need our wives to balance out the feeling part of it so that we don't just make a decision that's going to end in a disaster because everybody doesn't feel good about it. And the mothers need the dad to help balance out the other way. And so we need each other. And if the mothers are delinquent or the dads are delinquent, it's simply not a balanced team. We need each other to balance ourselves out, to balance our homes. James 4:17, and I quoted this earlier, but I will just read it again. "Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." The next one, I'd like to look at the story of Rehoboam. It's a story that I don't know that I've read very often, but it's an interesting story. Rehoboam was Solomon's son, and he was going to be the next king after Solomon died. So Rehoboam went to Shechem for the Israelites to make him king, and Jeroboam, he was in Egypt. He had fled to Egypt earlier because Solomon wanted to kill him. Solomon wanted to kill him because Ahijah had prophesied that 10 tribes of Israel were going to be given to Jeroboam instead of Rehoboam, and Solomon did not want that. He wanted Israel to stay within his family. So, Rehoboam going to Shechem, Jeroboam coming from Egypt with the people of Israel, and their one plea to Rehoboam was, please lighten the yoke for our people. And Rehoboam thought about it. I thought it was notable that Rehoboam told them, let me think about it. I'd like to think about it for 3 days. And he wanted to ask advice. And he did that. He asked advice of the older men, and he asked advice from younger men. The older men's advice was, you should listen to the people, you should work with them, and consider what they're saying. And the younger men's advice was, just tug the line. Don't give them any slack. Just require what you're going to require, and don't worry about what they're saying. And Rehoboam chose the latter. Rehoboam chose to be hard on them, basically, could we say, be dominating. He just didn't really pay attention to what anybody was saying. He paid attention to the younger people that told him what to do, but he wasn't listening to his people. He wasn't hearing their hearts. And so he told them when they came back 3 days later what he decided to do. He's going to require more of them than what Solomon did. There's a verse, 1 Kings 12:14. He says, my father made your yoke heavy, and I will add to your yoke. My father also chastise you with whips, but I will chastise you with scorpions. So we see here, I would say, a hard man, just demanding what he wants, and he's going to get it because he has power, and what he says goes. So in the course of all that interaction, 10 tribes of Israel did indeed leave and go with Jeroboam. They rebelled and just said, fine, if you're going to do that, we are leaving. We want Jeroboam for our leader. And that's what happened. So we see a man that was dominating, just simply asking for what he wanted and expecting that it would happen. And I think a lot of times in our homes it can be the same way. If we are just simply demanding what we want to see, whether that be dad or whether that be mom, and we're not taking time to listen to the hearts of our children, I think a lot of times it can create a feeling of rebellion within our children. Just being asked to perform but not feeling like they're being heard. It can also be very divisive in the home. So if dad is demanding and mom sees what she perceives as a child suffering from that, how do you handle that? I think there are ways for that to be handled correctly. I think a mom and dad should talk about those things in private if there is disagreement on that, and children should hear a unified voice from mom and dad. And to be clear, we are going to make mistakes. Sometimes we do fail. Sometimes things really maybe grab us the wrong way and we respond in a way that we shouldn't. And maybe to children that feels harsh. Maybe it feels like mom and dad are being unreasonable. And maybe sometimes they are, because we are human. We make mistakes. And then I think it's very important that we parents are honest about that and just simply say, I'm sorry, I messed up. And can you please forgive me? Harsh leadership is often an indication of a deeper problem. If I am demanding everything around me, it can be an indication. I think a fairly obvious one is pride, maybe hidden sin, something that I have not dealt with, something that's on my conscience that is not clear between God and myself. It can come out of fear. Fear of maybe losing control for whatever reason. It might be me trying to fill the void in my heart that hasn't been filled. Our hearts will be full of something. And if we allow God and His Spirit to fill our hearts, that void is filled, and we are much better equipped to interact with people around us, to interact within our own family. And if that void is not filled, we will be looking for something to fill it. And many times we'll be doing it subconsciously, doing things that we're trying to fill that void within our heart, and maybe not even realizing that we're doing it. And that may work itself out by demanding control over somebody because it makes us feel good. It makes us feel like we're being respected or listened to. But it is carnal. The third story, I really like this story, is of Nehemiah in Nehemiah chapter 1. It is a man that was in exile. I'm also just simply going to paraphrase this into my own words. Nehemiah was King Artaxerxes' cupbearer in the palace. So I don't know what all went with that, but I would reckon that he had a fairly decent life if he was serving the king. And he heard that the walls of Jerusalem had fallen, that the gates were burned, and he was very sad about this. And it says that he showed his sad countenance when he was in front of the king, and that was not normal for him. And the king asked him, "Why are you sad?" And he told him, and in the course of the conversation, he asked the king, "May I please?" He pleaded with him, "Go back and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem." The king granted him that request, and it said that in the process of all this, Nehemiah repented before the Lord. He repented for the sins of Israel. He repented for his own sins, and he fasted and just simply opened himself before God. And I think it's something that is very important in our lives, in our families, that we are clean between God and us, simply repenting and being open with God. Nehemiah snuck out in the dark and looked at the walls, tried to figure out what needs to happen with them, and came up with a plan. And then he went and talked to the people and communicated that plan to the people and got them excited about the plan of going and rebuilding this wall. It's really an amazing story how in a short amount of time, he got the people excited. They went and rebuilt not because he was there dominating everything and just saying, "Listen, let's get this done." I mean, he was very much saying that, but his heart was in it. And his heart was with the people, and the people felt that, and he inspired them. And they went and did something that the onlookers were just completely amazed by. Like, they couldn't believe this was happening. But it was the power of God working through Nehemiah, working through his heart, through the hearts of the people he was working with. And I think it's very much a picture of diligence, somebody that was earnestly invested in what he felt God wanted him to do. And I think very much that should be our mentality in our homes. Earnestly invested, knowing what's going on, maybe not literally going out in the dark and seeing what needs done, but being aware of our surroundings, being aware of what's going on in our homes, and planning, communicating, inspiring. And I think one of the most important things is just simply being with our family to carry out that vision, not being over here and expecting that our family over there will carry out our vision, but being together and working together accomplishes so much. There's two words that I was thinking about as it relates to the topic here, dominating, diligent, or delinquent. And those two words are connection and correction. So in order for us to have a happy home, in order for our children to grow up feeling loved, secure, having a sense of right and wrong, feeling accepted, and the list goes on and on and on, those two are very important. We must correct, but we must also connect. And I'd like to spend some time this morning just thinking about those two. What is connection? What comes to your mind when you think about connecting with your child. I'm not going to ask for a response, but just think about it, a definition for that as it relates to our connection within the family is an intentional emotional bond and relationship of trust, safety, and mutual respect. So, consistently being present to our children, I think, is a part of being connected with them. Just simply being there, spending quality time with them, showing them physical affection, sharing experiences, having daily conversations. Letting them feel that we understand them or that we empathize with them. And this starts at a very young age. Child comes and something is wrong, even though it might be something really small. And we can look at it and think, oh, well, that's really not a big deal, and we're busy with something and we kind of move on. But to that child, that's a big deal. They come, we should pay attention. We should bend down and look at what they're doing and make them feel like what's important to them is important to us. And not only make them feel that, but actually have that in our heart, care about it. And it's a very important part of connecting with our child. They feel that and they'll remember that for a long time. Being willing to let them see into our own heart. Sometimes this is pretty hard for us, maybe especially as fathers. We want to look like we have things together. We want to be right. But when we're not, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, sometimes we're not. Sometimes we make mistakes. And let children see that. Be willing to apologize to them. Be willing to say, I'm sorry, I messed up. And that is not saying that we degrade ourselves in front of them, but that we simply allow them to see that we're human just like they are. And respectful communication. When we are talking with our children, whether that is in correction, or maybe especially in correction, obviously there's a time in correction when a child needs to be taught and told, and maybe there's not just a whole lot of dialogue back and forth, but dialogue back and forth needs to be present within a relationship. It's not always just one way. It's not always just mom or dad telling the child and then the child needing to accept it and be quiet. Sometimes that is important, but it's also equally as important that a child feels understood, feels heard, and has an opportunity to say how they feel, because if they don't, once they get older, they will want to share how they feel, and they'll want to do it with someone, and if they've learned that it's safe and it's okay to do that with mom and dad, they will continue to do that with mom and dad. If they haven't learned that, if they haven't felt that, unfortunately, maybe they won't go to mom and dad. And these things are not all set in stone. There's so many variables to this. I think there's mistakes that can be made. There's ways that can be mended. I think relationships can be mended. But I'm speaking kind of in general, broad brush strokes here. If we learn to communicate with our children, listen to their hearts when they're young, hopefully that will be a part of our relationship as we grow older and will build the foundation of correction when it's necessary. Connecting with our children helps them feel safe, helps them feel loved, heard, and secure. And it gives them, or it helps them to trust us if we are connected with them. And it starts at a very young age. It starts at infancy, really. There's much a very young infant cannot understand, but there's also a tremendous amount that they do begin to understand at a very, very young age. And they very much feel the connection from their parents. What is correction? It's something that we don't enjoy doing, but it's something that is very important in a family. And that is simply teaching our children the principles of right and wrong. I think a very important one in correction is teaching a child that no means no. And here again, here's where I feel like I would just love to hear an older person here expounding about this, because there's so many different approaches to child training, and I really feel like I do not have the answers to all of this, but here are some of my thoughts, and by the grace of God, we do our best. Teaching a child that no means no, if they don't learn it when they're one or two, or maybe a little more broadly, if they don't learn it from mom and dad, when will they learn it? Will they then need to learn it from their school teacher? If they don't learn it from their school teacher, will they learn it from the church? If they don't learn it at church, will they learn it with the law? If they don't learn it with the law, ultimately, God has a moral law. And God says, this is right, this is wrong. And I think it's very important for us to teach our children that there is right and there is wrong. And obviously, in doing that, teaching them why, and not just black and white, white and wrong, but teaching them a sense that there is right and wrong, and it is very important to obey when they are told yes or no. When they do disobey, our approach to that, I think, is important. I think a part of correcting is discipline, and there are good ways to discipline. There are bad ways to discipline, and I'd like to read a couple scriptures that command us to discipline. Proverbs 13. 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. I'd like to just take note here that it says, he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Love is there first. It's because of love that we are disciplining our child. Proverbs 19:18 is another verse. It says, chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. And Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. And so we see correction is a very important part of our home, of teaching our children the difference between right and wrong, but not only teaching them the difference between right and wrong, but shaping their character, shaping their moral compass of where they should go in life. It is our responsibility as parents to be that moral compass for them when they're young, but ultimately, in a matter of a short time, children grow up and they will develop their own moral compass within their own hearts, their consciences, like we heard this morning. And it's us that are shaping them. So as much as physical discipline is not an enjoyable part of family life, I think it is important. It's not a popular thing in today's society, but I think it is a command of God, and I think if we want to follow God's way, I think it's important that we do it that way. And I would also just very much highlight that there are wrong ways to physically discipline, and it needs to be done out of a heart of love. It should never be done out of anger. It should never be done hastily before we maybe get our own emotions in control. Sometimes there's things that happen, and it grips us, and something needs to be done now, but I think it's good for parents to, if we feel that problem will not go away if we give ourselves 5 or 10 minutes to think and to just make sure that we're approaching our child correctly. It's much better to give a little bit of time to make sure that our child feels our heart of love in that discipline than to quickly rush into something and do the discipline and kind of feel a sense of relief because, now I've taken care of it. So just being very careful, being very intentional, that it is out of a heart of love that we're doing that for our child. And I think a child will feel that. And it'll be the difference between a child maybe resenting that and feeling rebellious, or the child feeling like you truly love them and being given a sense of right and wrong out of that love. So the two, we've looked at correction, we've looked at connection, and I'd like to look at what it looks like one without the other. So we have correction without connection feels like, and I just finished some of these, correction without connection feels like rejection, or it can. Connection without correction is affection without direction. There's a lot of actions here, but hopefully this makes sense. And then the last one, connection with correction is protection with direction. So I'd like to just break down these three ideas in the last part of the topic here this morning. So, and I've touched on some of these already in just simply talking about connection and correction, but I'd like to put it together now. Correction without connection feels like rejection. If we are correcting a child and we don't have that foundation of connection, that shouldn't be happening 5 or 10 minutes before the correction. This should have happened in years gone by already. But if there's that if there's not that connection there, a child might hear that, they might not hear it coming out of your mouth, but they might feel like you're telling them you're a bad person. You're a disappointment. I don't really accept you. And once again, we're not saying those things, but if we don't have that connection and we're correcting them, they can feel that way. Without emotional connection, discipline can feel cold and harsh, and often result in resentment and rebellion. Connection without correction is affection without direction. So basically just loving on your child and just wanting to do everything nice for them and never do anything that will make them unhappy. And it might be easy to feel like, well, yes, we really do want them to have a happy home life. We want them to always be happy. We don't ever want to do anything that's going to make them upset. So let's just make sure that, you know, if whatever their name is starts squalling because they don't like what we're asking them to do, that we're just going to kind of quickly change what we ask of them and try to hustle them to a happier state because they don't like what we're asking of them. I think that's what connection without correction is. The connection is there. That's important. But there also needs to be that correction to help them, just give them a sense of what's right and wrong. Giving connection without correction is a little bit like making sure a car has plenty of fuel, and fuel is very important, but then taking the steering wheel out. So we've got a car, lots of fuel, no steering wheel. The car is going to go, but where's it going to go? And the last one, connection with correction, is protection with direction. So we want to protect our child. We want to direct our child. And I think our goal in raising our children is to show them the heart of God through us. Show them that God is a God of love. Show them that God is a God of grace. God is a God of justice. God is a God of forgiveness. God is a God of mercy. Hebrews 12:6, for whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. And here again we see love coming first. God loves us, therefore he chastens us. We need correction. As adults, we need correction. God loves us and God chastens those he loves. And I think the same is true in a family setting between parents and children. If we're not giving our children connection when we're correcting them, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, they'll feel like we're not accepting them. And a child wants to be accepted. We all want to be accepted. Deep within our hearts, it doesn't matter how old we are, we want acceptance. We want people around us to think that we're okay and to be our friends. And if a child is not getting that from their parents, they are going to try to get it somewhere. And a lot of times that might play out in many different ways, what a child will go after as they grow up to fill that void of acceptance that maybe they haven't felt from their mother or father growing up. Instead of feeling rejected, a child can feel redirected. We can build character without damaging the sense of their belonging. And we can teach truth without losing their trust. I think those three things, very important parts of family life. We want to teach truth, we want to build character, and we want them to feel accepted. And we want to do all those things without wounding their spirit, without damaging their sense of belonging, and without losing their trust. And as we combine the connection and correction, those three can be accomplished. And I would just emphasize again, we need God. We need humility. We need wisdom from God that we don't have of our own strength. And asking God for that, and again, I would just emphasize allowing our children to see within our own hearts that they see we don't have it together. We need God's help to help us through this journey. I think to conclude, I'd like for us to just think about what our goal is, what our overarching goal is in this journey of teaching, of connecting, of correcting. We are correcting because we want them to teach them right and wrong. Or we want to teach them right and wrong. We don't want them to do things that are bad. We want them to do things that are good. But it goes further than just when they're 14 or 15 or whenever they start growing up and thinking for themselves. They do start thinking for themselves, and they will think more independently the older they get. And once they have left home, once they've established their own home, they are now relying on hopefully God, but also very much on the moral compass that we have instilled within them during their growing up years. And I think it's something for us to think on as we teach. It's not just do this, do that. It's what's going to last in their mind and their heart once we're 90 years old in the rocking chair and they are the generation raising their children and trying to navigate life, trying to decide what's right, what's wrong, what do we do with this situation. We don't know what's going to be happening out there. We don't know the decisions they're going to be facing, but we know the principles of God. We know what's truth, and we can teach them that. And once they're older, they can take those truths and apply it to the current day situations. I'd like to close with a story of an example of this. During my time at Faith Mission, I talked with a lot of different young people, and one of the guys that I was doing an interview with, he grew up in an Anabaptist community, but his peers were very rough into things that they should not have been, and he was one of them, and he admitted that. But he made a decision to turn away from that and to straighten his life out and do what is right. And during the course of our interview, I asked him, what made you decide to do that? Why did you not go with your peers? Why did you not throw everything out like your peers did and just go live the way you wanted to? And he thought for a little bit, and I don't have his exact words, But the idea was, he said, I just knew that Dad is so proud of me and loved me so much that I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And I think what was there was a connection. There was a connection between Dad and son. Dad did not like what his son was doing. And I think that Dad spent time telling his son that he shouldn't be doing what he was doing. But he had instilled within his son a sense of right and wrong. His son knew that it was wrong to do what he was doing. And he also knew that his dad was not forcing him to not do what he was doing. He was leaving it up to him. But ultimately, because of that connection and the correction that had been applied earlier in his life, he knew that the right thing to do was to follow the path of righteousness and not go with his peers. It was just a very powerful example to me and a challenge to me to think about not only the here and now, not just make sure my children are doing all the right things and none of the bad things, but looking at it more broadly, am I building that sense of direction within them that they can use for themselves once they are thinking for themselves and just know that I love them and I care about them and I want what's good for them. And I'd just like to leave that with us this morning. Let's rise for prayer.